Seems to be recording already. Right, so it's the 29th of September 2016, and I'm Chris Clark, and I'm talking to my mum, Jill Clark, again. I think this is part 7 of your story, yes. It'll be in however many 30-minute installments we manage to get through in the next couple of days, I suppose. Anyway, the last time we spoke, we talked about your school days, and we talked about you going to art school, and we talked about the outbreak of the war. So that was 1939. So
the outbreak of the war was before I went to art school.
Before you went to art school, okay. Yeah. So
that was the reason I went.
I see.
Well, one of the reasons.
Well, let's just be absolutely clear where we are. So it was 1939, September, wasn't it? It started.
How old were you then? We were actually on holiday in Littlehampton.
Oh, right.
Well, not Grandpa wasn't, but we were. And when we came back, that's what we were faced with. Announcement over the radio that we were at war.
Did you hear that after you got back from holiday? Or
yes.
Why, all right. Yeah.
We sat there transfixed in our seats, and I really didn't know what to make of it. My first reaction was, oh my goodness, I hope Daddy doesn't have to go. And he laughed and said, no, I don't think so this time.
He was what age then? He was already in his 50s, was he?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Late 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was out of the ones I knew he wasn't going. I didn't feel quite so bad.
Mm.
In was actual fact, he became a fire watcher and sort of up every night, you know, didn't really sleep much.
Was there any question that your mother might have been called up at all? She was a lot younger, wasn't she?
No, 20 years younger, yes. Mm. No. But she did, for the first time ever, she did go and do a job for a bit when we were at Woodford, which horrified my father. But it was a jeweller's shop, and she had to do war work, and she took over from her, took over very well.
All right. Yeah.
And then Jane was on the way, and that was the end of that.
So Woodford was your home at that stage then?
No, we were at Sidcup when the war broke out.
Right.
And of course, immediately, he got notice that his job was finished, because every student went into one or the other of the forces, all being young men, and it was turned into a clearing station for the duration of the war, and they came back afterwards. So he then got to find, at his age, to find another job somehow.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he got it, but he went, as you know, to Bancroft's, which was a lovely school in Woodford Green in Essex. And in some ways, those years were very happy years, because the people there and the all the housemasters and things were, their wives were lovely. And it's quite a community, you know, those schools are, aren't they?
Mm.
Although he wasn't a housemaster, he came home. It was very much caught up in their life.
So did he, for a while, commute from Sidcup up to Woodford then?
Mm-hmm.
It was a long way.
And then it was decided that what we'd have to do was to rent the house out and try and find somewhere. That's when we got this awful flat. And my poor mother, it must have been awful for her, really. And already there was people upstairs who were bombed out from the London. Very nice little lady who incidentally lost 2 of her 3 sons. And she'd got not a stick of furniture. And so they gave her my bedroom suite, because his grandpa said we hadn't room for it anyway. And she hadn't anything, and yet that's what you did in those days. You just gave it away to people who hadn't. That was gone. But she was a nice little lady, and when she went to somewhere better, this East End family moved in. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. You felt sorry for them because they'd been bombed out, but they were a pain.
So this was the flat in...
Smiths.
This was a flat in Woodford then, was it?
East End flat. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Edwardian. You know what those flats are like. And the whole of the back garden was dug over for vegetables and just the washing. And he had an allotment in... there was a monastery behind Ancroft School, owned by these monks. And of course, Grandpa was very good with people at spoke Latin, so he got in with them immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you can have a plot here,
mm-hmm.
and any fruit that's going, you may have, you know, within reason. So he fell on his feet there. He worked in the evenings up at the allotment until such time as the raids got so bad that he had no time.
Mm-hmm. Was this straight away that you moved up there then in 1939?
No, not immediately. But, because I had had, that's why we were on holiday,
mm-hmm.
I had had in quick succession measles really badly, and that was a nasty disease in those days. In a sort of 12 to 13, it's not a good time, followed by whooping cough, which I had really badly.
Mm.
I just didn't keep anything down for about 6 weeks. I went like a little Belson case. It really was. And I said, you've got to get your way to the sea. And I'd lost so much schoolwork, and they were all being evacuated. I don't know where they went to, but the whole school. And they said, well, she's so far behind now. So, as I was always drawing, he decided that the best thing for me to do was to go to the art school, and he would continue to make sure that I read the right, which he did. I mean, he taught me more than anybody did at school. Kept an eye. And so that's how I went to art school, but I hadn't been there long. We were shifted. And then I went to the Southwest Essex Technical College,
mm-hmm.
which was a beautiful building, actually. Not the only beautiful building in Walthamstow, I think. Like a Greek temple. And I had very happy years at that art school. Very happy years. Made friends, my friend Pam and Frankie. We were friends for life.
So was that one? That wasn't Pam from school days. That was a different Pam.
No.
Was it?
Oh, we kept up with her.
Yeah.
Well, she went on, and of course should have gone to. She would nowadays. She would have gone to Oxford or Cambridge. She was that clever.
This was Pam Jackson then.
Very clever girl.
And who was Frankie? Frankie
was the one that was my bridesmaid.
Yes.
She came to Woodford Green from Eastbourne, came to live with her auntie. Because on the coast, everybody was vulnerable on the coast anywhere.
Mm.
And they sent her up there, but it wasn't any better there, it was worse. They seemed to follow us. We had the dive bombers in Kent.
Mm.
We watched them. It was quite an entertainment, actually, but you could see them from our dining room French windows. You were watching them going over, and you think, which was that that went down?
Yeah.
You cheered if it was a German. Shouted abuse if it wasn't.
So you were still in Sidcup then?
For a while.
For a while.
You just had to pack the whole house up.
Yeah.
And put some stuff in store, because there's no room in the flat to put anything.
So all that, there's nothing much happened in 1939, was there, really?
No, we all wondered what was happening.
Mm.
And we went to Norman's for a bit over the Christmas, and nothing happened. So, and then, of course, then he had to travel up from Tring, you know.
Mm.
And it was very difficult travelling to London, because all stations were blacked out.
Right.
You couldn't know where you were.
Mm.
Instead of saying, where are we? It was a big blackout over it. So you had to remember to count the stations. If you got out of the wrong one, it was hard cheese. Except when you got to your destination, you'd know you were in London. But very difficult. Mm. Stations were a good target.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Disrupt any travel of any sort.
Mm.
It was very difficult, I find. They seemed to follow us because you depended on who's what one you were on, you know. Mm-hmm. We didn't have those coming in from the coast then, but we had just ordinary bombing raids, which went on, which is the like from the Blitz, which was 10 months of solid bombing every night. And that was grim. I can still remember the sky was never anything but red. Blood red from the fires. You could see it for miles. And you see, Woolwich Arsenal wasn't very far from us, which they decided was a very good target, of course. But when we went to Woodford, there was bombing then, but the worst part was when the doodlebugs started later.
Oh, much later, yeah.
And we were right on the run.
Yeah.
It ended at Chingford.
Mm.
That was it. The reservoir was full of doodlebugs. Absolutely, must have been completely full up. Dead doodlebugs.
Well, at least they fell there. They didn't. They just made splashed. A few people wet,
yes.
And
yeah.
Killed a few fish.
And then it was followed by the rockets, which were even worse because there was no warning. And just came down with a hideous explosion.
So what age were you when the war broke out? And you were 13?
Yeah. I'd had my 13th birthday in the January after the war broke out.
So basically your whole teenage years.
Yeah, 13 to 19.
People didn't talk about teenagers in those days, did they?
No. But that would be now. Teenage years were not there.
So did you sort of keep abreast of all the developments? Were you listening to the news and reading the papers?
Yes. Well, I don't know that I read the papers so much, but I listened avidly to the news and went to, occasionally, if you went to the pictures, they always had a Pathé News, and there was the latest news. Didn't have anything local, but it was always what was happening on the fronts.
Lots of jolly music and
yeah.
But that was the main way people kept up, wasn't it, through those newsreels?
Yeah, they were very good, actually, their time. Very good.
How safe or unsafe did it feel, though, in those early years? We know about the Blitz, but was there a deep fear that we would be invaded?
Very, very deep fear. And it was very well founded, and it always amazes me that they didn't. It was more by the grace of God, honestly, because that was that decided it, I think. That and the fact that the RAF kept them at bay, couldn't get the bombers through, and then despite the fact that they intensified, they tried to literally obliterate us with bombs. It wasn't just London, as you know, it was everywhere. Got it.
Yes, well, we were just looking at it the other day, weren't we, in the Portsmouth Museum?
Everywhere, up, as far as you can think.
Yeah.
They really... That it didn't do what he thought it was going to do. It didn't demoralise us. It dug our heels in. And because that hadn't worked, and he'd lost so many airmen and planes.
Yeah.
That he decided he couldn't do it that way. And he realised that the scene wasn't going to be much easier because we'd meet them halfway, And he decided that he'd have to give it up, actual invasion, and went on to other things. It really was touch and go.
Yeah.
I think that was... that frightened me far more than any air raid, anything they could have done, because the thought of one of those people coming in, bursting into your house, which they would have done.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to be nice, because that's the one thing he wanted to do, get his country under his thumb, very much so. Having got the whole of Europe, he decided that was his prime goal, wasn't it? It didn't work. But it was a real fear.
Well, of course, the other way that strategically they thought they could get us was by denying all trade, so all the submarine warfare. So
they thought they could starve us out.
How soon did that become apparent?
Almost immediately, because and the poor really did go through it. I mean, they were not. One of Dad's friends was sunk three times in the years of the war. Not once, but three times, and survived.
Yeah.
And the only thing that annoyed him was the fact that his grandfather's watch, which was very dear to him, got smashed going overboard. That's the only thing to upset him. Oh, here we go again. Over the side.
Well, I suppose if you were tough and the seawater temperature wasn't freezing cold, that would kill you in seconds. Yeah, I suppose you could survive for a little while. And,
yes, you could. Somebody pick you up.
Yeah, as long as they did come and pick you up.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's a bit much to have experienced that three times, you know, being torpedoed.
So everybody, you said that your back garden was all dug up for
everything,
vegetables.
Parks, everything
so
was dug
so
up.
Everybody was expected to do a little bit of towards,
keeping us. And that's what kept us
keeping going.
Fairly fit. Because they brought in rationing because they fell down on that in the First World War and didn't do it. People literally hadn't got in the country, likewise, you know, you were all right, but in the towns you could starve because there was nothing. And everything was changed completely. There's shortages of everything. But at least you did get your ration. What you did with it was, you know, your own affair.
There's been a study recently of that particular story, which is not particularly well known, that they obviously moved the rationing, that whole kind of administration from London, where it would probably have got knocked out very early, to some very remote little place in Cardiganshire.
That's right.
And when nobody ever thought so, then these people all turned up, and the whole place was turned into a sort of distribution centre. It's very, very clever
the way they were organised.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we went occasionally, we went to Aunt Mary, who then lived in Borth, in North Wales, isn't it? And there was no sign that it was a war on, except because you wouldn't even get on the beach there.
Yeah.
For once, you hadn't got barbed wire and mines. And it was incredible to see, be able to go onto the beach again. And there, you know, there was no shortage of food at all. They had inspectors, I think I've told you this before, who came round the mountains and they came on a bicycle and didn't have a car, they had a bicycle.
Oh, yes.
Bag of note things, and people spotted them for miles coming. Inspectors coming, everybody hid anything they'd got, so that by the time the inspector came, there was nothing. And the prize thing was the butcher that Aunt Mary had just had a delivery of liver. Put it all without any covering or anything into an old attaché case and put it under the bed. What it leaked. It looks as though there's a dead body under the bed. What a horrible mess. She's livers like. But that was just one item. I'm sure we've had a report that there is some sort of, nothing like that here. Must be somewhere else. It's the people down in the valley there. Poor inspector, I'm going cycling off somewhere else. Has he gone? He'd fall out again. But it wasn't so, you know, in the cities. There was no way out. But there was a terrible thing in London, and that's why my mother would never touch rabbit ever again. Because they went round with sacks at night, organised bunches, and killed. But every cat that was out for a walk was snaffled into them and was sold as rabbit.
Yeah.
If you put them, skin them, you can't tell the difference. So there were plenty of little pet moggies who turned into rabbit stew.
Closing his ears.
But my mother would never touch No, I said, well, it's not cat now, it's rabbit, you know.
Yes, right.
No.
Well, it would put you off forever, I suppose. Yeah.
They did a roaring tade, apparently. What a horrible thing to do. Every poor cat had just gone out for a pee, snaffled into a sack. The blackout, I couldn't see them.
Yeah.
And that was quite rife.
What about friends and relations getting called up? I mean, some of your older relatives, I suppose, must have.
Well, my cousin, who is a year older than me, was a nurse. She was exempt, of course.
Barbara. Mm.
And my cousin Mary went into the Air Force, and her brother Edmund went into the Air Force.
Mm.
Now, he was older than her, and he just became a sergeant, and she went almost to the top. And it irritated him because he had to salute her every time he saw her. She was in the catering corps because she'd done home economics. And I've never seen anything so smart in all my life. And Barbara and I had to stand for attention when we came. Stand up straight. Don't slouch. She never saw anyone so smart in that uniform with an officer's cap on.
So where was she based?
I don't know.
No, it doesn't matter.
Uncle Joe was terribly proud of her. She was very good at that, very good at organising, very bossy, you know. But great fun. She must have been quite popular, I think. And two of my boy cousins went in. There was one who went into, two of them that went into bomb disposal. And one of them was at Buckingham Palace in that film. And not wasn't there, but another bomb went, and he was, it went off, and he was blown through a wall, and when he was out the other side, he hadn't got a stitch on. It had cut every stitch of his underwear, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all right in himself.
Extraordinary.
The wall gave way as he went through it. Solid brick wall.
Who was that?
I can't remember now who it was. It was one of my cousins. I don't think there were an awful lot that probably sort of either dismissed it with the age or were too young, you know.
No, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, one assumes that when people are, you know, country declares war, everybody's going off to fight and things, but there are all these hundreds of, for every person that's actually fighting, there are dozens of people doing things to support
exempted.
That person. Well, not exempted, but, you know, well, they may be exempted, but, you know, they're going to be better employed doing something in a support role.
You see, was very good at her job. She was in charge of a whole thing in this, I don't know where she worked, but they said that she was doing vital work.
Mm.
She didn't need to be called up.
Mm.
Dad actually wasn't 18, he was 17. He lied about his age because he was so annoyed that Homer went before him.
Right.
He put down he was 18, he wasn't. A lot of them did that.
Yeah.
He couldn't wait to get in the Air Force. His love of airplanes, anyway. He was determined to fly.
Well, he was very lucky, though, wasn't he? All the things, all the near misses.
Mm.
But so were you. I mean, bombs nearly fell on you at least once.
Oh, yes.
Did they not?
You've heard that story, haven't you?
No, but folks in the future haven't, so maybe tell it again.
I think the one thing that I remember most was when I was going up to London, up to Fleet Street, up to Bolt Court to do this course on lithography and printing, which Grandpa wanted me to do once a week. So off I went on the bus up to London from Woodford. And coming home, there was nearly always an air raid going off early. We're waiting for this bus in a cafe, and came out. And in those days, they would fill the bus up, standing and sitting, and then the conductor would go no more. And I said, oh, please, I must get on, because I knew my parents. I said, there's no mobile phone, not even a phone.
No.
You couldn't let them know where you were.
No.
And they must have been worried sick, I think. And all the, you know, this, I didn't want to go in the shelter, I wanted to get home. So I had to wait for the next one. So I went back and sort of got in the shelter a little bit. And the next thing was a young man who'd been behind me, and he decided to walk wherever he was going, probably locally. And he came around the corner, and it was this absolutely green colour. And he said, oh, all this, he said, what a good thing you didn't get on that there bus, he said. Because it ain't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that bang you just heard was that bus.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't anything left of it.
Grief.
So that was a very lucky thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I distinguished myself in another time, because I was slightly on edge, you know, waiting, because the morning had come. And there was an American who came into his cafe, and there were bombs dropping, you know, and we didn't take any notice. And this came a bit close. Well, he started having hysterics. This is just not on. And I said to him, for goodness sake, lie on the floor and put your hands over your head and shut up. You're in England now, you don't behave like that. Behind me said, I'm such a stupid little man.
See.
You don't have hysteria and things like that. What's the matter with you?
Well, by the time the Americans came in, so about 42 or something.
Well,
so
they didn't very well want, you see.
We're not going bothering with air aid shelters anymore at that stage.
Well, to certain people, if you wanted to get home, you didn't. You got your bus and hoped you'd get home.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could be there all night.
Yes.
You had to sort of think, you got used to things like that, you know, took your, because everybody said, if your name's on it, it'll get you, whatever you do, wherever you are, it'll get you, if your name's on it. So with that, you thought, well, you have to be slightly fatalistic and think, well, what's going to be, will be.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other worst times was when we were in our Morrison shelter, and that's after my sister was born, and that was about when the doodlebugs were coming over, literally 3 a minute.
Mm-hmm.
They really literally must have been one after the other, one after the other, and you knew that one of them could just stop slightly short and that would be it. So Mother and Jane and Anne had gone off up north, as I when all the ceilings came down, and there weren't any windows, they were all boarded up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Been out, it was made, they didn't put any more glass, and they just boarded them up, and they had to be lit or candles. And I said, we really can't have a small baby like that. She nearly choked to death. All this stuff from the scene, you know what those ceilings are like.
Yes,
from yours.
Yeah.
That's what came down on us.
Yeah.
And the mess was indescribable. I said, you really cannot have this. You go away and I'll look after you here, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just at the worst time. And Auntie Edna lived at St. Albans, which wasn't so far away.
No.
But they didn't get one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just stopped. That was the end of
their range. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was decided that we should go there for a weekend, you know, to kind of have a few nights' rest. But one night it got particularly bad, and there was a lot came, and there were a lot of hits in Woodford itself. I mean, my sister's school, the church got hit, and it blew out, but the children were all in the shelter, so they were all right.
I was lucky.
Fortunately. But I can remember Grandpa and I were sitting here, and I remember him saying to me, he never told me very much about, not until I was a bit older, about the First World War. And he said, well, I never expected in the rest of my life that I would have a daughter who was in the front line with me.
We'll stop.